Her mother, who was not a great student of religious matters, happened to read the word one day and thought it was a lovely name for a girl, was 8.5 years old, and she was reading the book under the bedclothes with a torch. Other children learned to read on basic primers with coloured pictures of apples, balls, cockroaches and so forth, not the device family. Anathema had learned to read from the book. It didn't have any apples and balls in it. It did have a rather good 18th-century woodcut of Agnes Nutter being burned at the stake and looking rather cheerful about it. The first word she could recognise was nice. Very few people at the age of 8.5 know that nice also means scrupulously exact, but Anathema was one of them. The second word was accurate. The first sentence she had ever read out loud was, "I tell ye thif, and I charge ye with my words, four shall ride, and four shall also ride, and three shall ride the sky as twixt, and one shall ride in flames, and there shall be no stopping them, not fish, nor rain, nor road, neither devil nor angel, and ye shall be their alpho Anathema." Anathema liked to read about herself. There were books which caring parents who read the right Sunday papers could purchase with their children's names printed in as the heroine or hero. This was meant to interest the child in the book. In Anathema's case, it wasn't only her in the book, and it had been spot on so far, but her parents and her grandparents and everyone back to the 17th century. She was too young and too self-centred at this point to attach any importance to the fact that there was no mention made of her children, or indeed any events in her future further away than 11 years' time. When you're 8.5, 11 years is a lifetime. And of course, if you believed the book, it would be. She was a bright child, with a pale face and black eyes and hair. As a rule, she tended to make people feel uncomfortable, a family trait that she had inherited, along with being more psychic than was good for her, from her great-great-great-great-great-grandmother. She was precocious and self-possessed. The only thing about Anathema her teachers ever had the nerve to upbraid her for was her spelling, which was not so much appalling as 300 years too late. The nuns took baby A and swapped it with baby B under the noses of the attaché's wife and the secret service men by the cunning expedient of wheeling one baby away. To be weighed, love, got to do that, it's the law, and wheeling another baby back a little later. The cultural attaché himself, Thaddeus J. Dowling, had been called back to Washington in a hurry a few days earlier, but he had been on the phone to Mrs. Dowling throughout the birth experience, helping her with her breathing. It didn't help that he had been talking on the other line to his investment counsellor. At one point, he'd been forced to put her on hold for 20 minutes. But that was okay. Having a baby is the single most joyous co-experience that two human beings can share, and he wasn't going to miss a second of it. He'd got one of his Secret Service men to videotape it for him. Evil in general does not sleep, and therefore doesn't see why anyone else should. But Crowley liked sleep. It was one of the pleasures of the world, especially after a heavy meal. He'd slept right through most of the 19th century, for example, not because he needed to, simply because he enjoyed it. Although he did have to get up in 1832 to go to the lavatory. One of the pleasures of the world. Well, he'd better start really enjoying them now while there was still time. The Bentley roared through the night, heading east. Of course, he was all in favour of Armageddon in general terms. If anyone had asked him why he'd been spending centuries tinkering in the affairs of mankind, he'd have said, "Oh, in order to bring about Armageddon and the triumph of hell." But it was one thing to work to bring it about, and quite another for it to actually happen. Crowley had always known that he would be around when the world ended, because he was immortal and wouldn't have any alternative, but he'd hoped it would be a long way off. Because he rather liked people. It was a major failing in a demon. Oh, he did his best to make their short lives miserable because that was his job, but nothing he could think up was half as bad as the stuff they thought up themselves. They seemed to have a talent for it. It was built into the design somehow. They were born into a world that was against them in a thousand little ways, and then devoted most of their energies to making it worse. Over the years, Crowley had found it increasingly difficult to find anything demonic to do which showed up against the natural background of generalised nastiness. There had been times over the past millennium when he'd felt like sending a message back below saying, "Look, we're..."